On this episode of ITAV, we take a look at the platform of video conferencing, the number of them, plus the number of people getting into it, both Facebook, Google's rebranding them, and obviously we all have Zoom. In addition to that, we also take a look at the need for cybersecurity in IT firms, all that and more. Next on ITAV.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is ITAV, episode 41, recorded Friday, May 1st, 2020, the golden era.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by
Sure, sound extraordinary.
This is ITAV, the monthly look at the IT and the AV space and how they come together. My name is Tom Albright. I am your host. With us to discuss the news that we've gathered that impacts this area. First and foremost, my buddy, Mr. Derek Junkus from Extron Electronics. Welcome, sir.
Hello, Tim. Thanks for having me. Good to see you. Yeah,
absolutely. Good to see you, man. And also with us, a young man who has not been with us in a couple months, not for anything. It's just because I'm an idiot and forgot to email him. Sean Reed, Mr. Astro Man AV. How are you, sir?
Doing great in sunny Madison, Wisconsin.
You know what? I punk myself out and I call myself out when I screw up, and I totally did. So Sean was like, "Hey, I forgot. I thought you forgot about me." And if you hear a young man in the background, that is Sean's assistant, and when it comes to his consulting and programming. So, first and foremost, story here. And honestly, guy, this is two or three stories. If you go to the episode's website, this is what you're going to find is two or three links here. The first one we're going to touch on, though, is actually comes to us from AV Network. We have a piece from Wall Street Journal. I apologize. I liked the piece. It was about Facebook's new video conferencing system. There's also Google Hangouts is now been rebranded into Google Meet. All of these folks are coming out and saying, hey, you know what? Zoom's a thing, and Zoom's a verb now. They've reached Kleenex status. What does this mean, right? And so Facebook obviously was in the process of developing their own. It's not like you could roll this out in a month. But they have a new platform now called FaceTime, which is their meeting application. They also obviously have their physical hardware that you can plug into that. Sean, I'm going to start with you on this. As we are all looking to get back from working from home, and there are very smart people looking at the state of workplace technology and what that's going to look like post COVID-19. Folks are saying that this is going to be nothing but a giant hotel system. Some folks are saying, you know, as much as 30 or 40% of the workforce, they're not going to go back to the office, at least on a regular basis. You're not going to have an office.
Right.
So we're getting into a time when video conferencing has come into its own, I guess, is the best way to put this. Mm-hmm. So is there space for all of these competitors? And if so, what is this going to do to the IT departments and the AV departments as they're both trying to make these multiple platforms work together?
I think, like all things in industry, in business, it'll sort itself out. You're always going to have a lot of people at the beginning. In a couple of years, some of them will weed themselves out. That's generally what happens. The ones who can afford to stay in or create something innovative that people catch on to will definitely probably still be there. I don't imagine Zoom's going anywhere anytime soon. I think some of the newcomers might get bought out or just fold up. But I think it's good to have options. As we all know from integration and dealing with different clients, people are using multiple platforms. I know people who are using Zoom and Cisco and WebEx. And then now that they have people working from home, you know, 90 to 100% of their workforce at home, people are using and trying different platforms, but it works best for certain people in certain areas. So I'm seeing people test and taste, I guess, a lot of different technologies and different platforms. And I get a lot of emails and texts from friends in the middle of meetings like, how do I do this? You know, how does this work? And I'm like, here's my invoice. Send it to your company. And sure thing, I'll tell you how it works. but I think you'll see that, like I said, right now you're seeing about 7-8 being used. And I think over the course of a year or two, you'll see it probably whittle back down to 2 or 3. You can't have so much. As we've seen, you know, people try things and they see – they weigh the valuation. Are we making money at it? Can we make money at it? Or are we just spending money and it's not getting used. So we'll see. Facebook might take off. I don't see how it would in a professional sense. I could see it being used more in a prosumer sense, you know, video bloggers, people who have their own internet channels, something like that might see it become more used. But for professional use, I think people probably stick with the Zooms, their WebEx, Skype for Business, Teams, Meet. I know quite a few corporations that do Meet. So we'll see how it all works out. Anything can happen as people are going to now transition to that. Eagle. Oh, yeah? You have an opinion? Okay. where is my train of thought?
We're all going to, we're going to whittle down to two or three, I think, is where you were.
How about Derek jump in? I'll come back to my thought. Hold on.
All right. So, Mr. Jonkis, one thing about Sean's point there is Cindy Davis, who wrote the piece for SCN and AV Network, goes through a number of different ones. There was an analyst friend of mine who did a deep dive analysis about a year ago on the different soft codecs. At that time, there were over 240. 240 soft codecs for video conferencing. Now, not all of them are going to make it. To Sean's point, he's right. They're not all going to make it. But when you look at that, and in, from a support standpoint, from an AV standpoint, even from a manufacturer standpoint, who's bringing in the professional, you know, audio and video signals, and then converting that into a signal that these soft codecs can use, are we betting on any winners here? Or as AV professionals, this is more we're going to wait and see what the client wants, and then we're just going to make it happen regardless of what they use.
No, I think it's the sort of the golden era of, platform-based, cloud-based communications. And it's an interesting time because anyone who has leverage in the spaces that they occupy and they have an audience and they have a footprint and, you know, companies like Facebook or others, they know who their customers are. Google, they know who their customers are. They're very well in tune in that. I think they're all going to be able to give it a run in their own way. I think they serve a lot of different needs. Whether you're Microsoft or whether you're Zoom or you're Google or even like Facebook, as you mentioned, even if you're an upstart, I think you have an instant audience because, you know, you have this that's no more than 2 feet away from you at any time, your phone. Or if you're working in a professional environment, now you're sort of forced to use kind of what we're using today to record your show. And what makes it, the recipe that makes it successful, I think, is sort of the ability to quickly be able to share and collaborate in a way that now we've sort of been forced to, but I think even 20 years ago, it was, that same level of integration was going on. I mean, you would have a $40,000 Tandberg codec with a $25,000, I used to use a Sennheiser multiband VSXs. We used to use partial T1s or PRI circuits. It was so difficult. Now I turn on any electronic device that's near me and I could probably communicate with someone I know, care about, or have to do business with.
Yeah.
And so 20 years on, it's like, it's pretty amazing. But I still think the same opportunities, to go back to your question, same opportunities exist for the integration community, for customers, and that they can choose a platform that best allows them to conduct their business. They can talk to folks like Sean to be able to get, you know, a certain level of advocacy to figure out how that technology works together, because there are so many ways to be able to integrate this, but it's all about, you know, sort of what that customer's goals would be. And I think there's going to be some new goals as we turn this goal, this corner, and people start to think healthy thoughts instead of unhealthy thoughts here. When we're all not trapped at home, we're all not forced at home. I think, yeah, there'll probably be some companies or some individuals who make some choices, but I think for our industry, it's a great opportunity to be able to capture and kind of leverage the expertise of the industry to better perform that level of integration that you were mentioning and that Sean was alluding to earlier.
All right, Sean, though, I mentioned the fact to Derek that there were over 240, at least a year ago, soft codecs. When we're starting to help our clients assess what would the best one now, what are the specs now? Derek and I, and you are also a certain age where, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, Derek's right. we were looking at different specifications. They were $20,000, $30,000 systems.
Right.
The bandwidth was what it was, and we had to assess that. And when we moved from T1s over to the network, there were different specifications that we looked at. What are the specs now that we're looking at when it comes to these codecs, these soft codecs, these software platforms? Is it the bandwidth consumption? Is it security? Is it the ability to connect to other devices and other platforms? What are the specs that we need to make sure that these platforms have as we're advising our clients and their clients down the line?
Well, I'm going to dovetail into what Derek said. Interoperability is a big thing, which is what you're touching on. And now that people are working from home, everyone may not have the same laptop, the same version of operating system. So there are those issues. And depending, like you said, on security, that's a big thing I know for some clients. If you're used to having a secure meeting in a boardroom, now you have 20, 50 people on a meeting spread out all over the country, all over the world, and you don't know what their various security protocols are in place in their home or their remote office, and you're discussing proprietary information, that becomes an issue. And I'm only a year away from 40, guys, not that young. So I've been working professionally in this for 13 years as a hobby for 20-something years. So I remember those Tanbergs. I've actually touched one of those just not about 2 years ago. They still use them at Lockheed Martin, which is scary.
Well, there's a reason they use them at Lockheed Martin, because those suckers were incredibly secure.
Right. And anything that can't be hacked and is not digital, they love. But they still have a few of them still working. They need to be dusted off, but they're still there. I have a friend who works for a nonprofit, and he always is pinging me questions, and I'll give him some free answers. But they are a Cisco house, primarily. And when this all started, they went and upped their Zoom license, and now they're using Zoom instead because everyone's at home. So once a day, I get a question, well, what should we do? They're asking me, because he's the business manager, should we switch to this? Should we buy this? What do you think's best? And so eventually I typed up a little 3-page like memo for him, like, as a buddy, I'll do this for you. Here's an idea. You know, I said, here's some other things you can look at. I said, but also comes down to how you're going to transition, because they are a religious not-for-profit. So they're also looking at how they can do remote services. And that's a big thing that's coming up for houses of worship. How do I do remote services? Jewish High Holy Days are coming up soon. There's a big question there. Easter was a big issue for some of my clients. I had a church that called me and say, hey, you know, we haven't used this broadcast stuff in a while. We're not sure it still works. You know, turn it on, make sure it still works.
Tell me it wasn't Good Friday when they called that, when they called you.
It was right before Good Friday, literally the day before. Yeah. So, you know, and they were in a state where I couldn't get to and wasn't planning on going to, because I have a toddler home with asthma. So we're not traveling at all.
No.
So I think what you're going to see as these questions come up is going to depend on the industry. For example, just let's say something like Coca-Cola or KFC, that have proprietary recipes, or pharmaceutical industries. And now you've got your researchers and R&D guys working at home, perhaps. You're going to have to make sure you have some security when you're discussing proprietary formulas. The run-of-the-mill business that doesn't have to worry so much about security, perhaps, fine. They're going to be able to have a little more flexibility. But interoperability for people, you know, who are saying using Zoom, who are now say going to be maybe having to buy a Vadio system and send it to certain of their employees, or, you know, a Google Meet kit or certain hardware, and they start to build out these little systems and have to start buying systems, saying to employees at home, say, hey, here's a camera and here's a codec, you can set it up, right? I think we're going to see the industry change to where we're going to have to actually start designing kind of these DIY systems for employees, where a client might say, hey, I've got 50 employees working from home. I need a better system. What's a camera codec system that I can send to them? They can plug in themselves. And we'll be seeing people like Extron, Crestron, QSE start to, you know, look that way. I think Extron's, give them a little, you know, shameless plug. They've started to move that way with some of their new product, which I think is really cool. It's a little simpler, and you could easily put it in a box with a camera and send it to an employee. But then you still, you know, how we all change with that. Will we become consultants more needed, or will we become more obsolete as people switch to that do-it-yourself framework? That's a big question.
I was going to ask, can you even buy a USB camera right now?
Well, there's that.
Because they're very hard to get. I saw like 5 or 6-year-old cameras, like a whole bunch of them, like 10 of them. They're all going for $200 or $300. I'm like, man, there's some video desperation out there.
Oh, I got one if everyone needs one. I got a Logitech if anyone wants to buy one.
I have in the office. So obviously here in the AV Nation studio, we use Vadio PTZs. We have a Vadio matrix mix for that. But I've got an old Cisco. Actually, when you plug it in, it says Tanberg. An old Cisco webcam. It's gorgeous. I don't want to get rid of it. But I also have a Logitech Brio for some of the other offices, and that's a good one as well. It that one's 4K. I think my Cisco / Tanberg is HD. But you're right. I mean, there's talking with David Danto, who now works for Poly. They had some old Eagle Eyes that were in a warehouse that they didn't realize that they had, I guess, between the transition between Polycom and Plantronics. And, you know, they were contacting schools, school systems, because they are in desperate need for those as well. Because you're right, Derek, you can't find them. You know?
Right.
Real quickly, Derek sent me something from the DOD that I wanted him to tap into. And it's a kind of a platform or a checklist on safely using collaboration services. When we're looking at this, Derek, and you know, there's things that there are very few things that we can do inside the home, right? Because these are people's property, right? Let's be practical here. As an employer, you know, unless I'm providing the network, there's a point where the employee is responsible for certain things. Including the connectivity to maybe the employer provided laptop. From there, though, it's the employer's job, right? Unless we can discuss about employee provided technology as well. But is this sort of document, and I'll send it to Mitchell so we can put a link up on this page, a good kind of starting point for organizations to go down and say, you know, check all these boxes, or at least check as many of these boxes as we can?
Yeah, I think kind of like we've talked about in the past, but even today, as Sean kind of alluded to, and you're kind of speaking to, you know, in consideration of security, you know, they're typical AV devices. You know, we're all, you come from the AV world, you have a passion for it, you've been educated in it, you're looking for specifications, and you look and understand the constraints of how things operate. And in this world, if things are in the cloud and they're running on other people's networks and you just benefit from the service, I think it's very difficult to determine the kind of criteria that are even available to choose from, short of, you know, the things that might appear in menus that affect the way that you present yourself, the way you hear somebody else, or the way they hear you. So like Sean, when you were mentioning, you know, your customers are going to have different criteria for what's acceptable. I think what the NSA has been doing in general with cybersecurity, I think what Department of Homeland Security has been doing in general with cybersecurity, is trying to break some of this down to expose people to what some of the potential rules of the road could be. And in this particular document, there are some criteria that the NSA is offering to consider when selecting a collaboration service. I don't believe they're taking a stand, but they do mention things like end-to-end encryption. Who has that? Yeah. Right? So as your data is in transit, it's in flight between you and me, it's headed to the cloud, whether it's a recording or whether it's our direct communications. You know, what is the NSA seeing from that? And we all know they will probably know that as well as anyone else, because that's sort of their job for all things technology, I would imagine. But I think the benefit for us as consumers of that information is you can understand from the different platforms that they're seeing out there, what are some of those expectations that you should have? And for customers that are doing business with the government, their secure requirements, this is also helpful because I think it's a tell. It lets you know what things may or may not be acceptable depending on the criteria. So that's why I sent it along, and hopefully it could benefit anyone else who might find that information useful, either for their own education or for the education of their clients.
Yeah, I like that. So. All right, let's wrap up this actually with a story from our friends over at MyTech Decisions, mytechdecisions.com, talking about why your AV integrator needs a cybersecurity expert. From the article, quote unquote, IBM report says the average total cost of a data breach worldwide is $3.92 million, with the average cost in the United States being $8 million. Talking about, you know, making sure that your system and your client systems are safe. Sean, as we're talking about soft codecs here, right? Mm-hmm. A number of years ago, and I've said this 1,000 times, and I'll say it 1,000 times more. Teresa Payton, very smart security expert, told me in an interview once, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when you get hacked. So why do IT integrator or IAV integrators rather need security experts, and what sort of systems do they need to tackle and be a part of?
Well, we definitely need to be aware and be educated in IT security, especially in the big change in the AV network infrastructure. 5-6 years ago, when AV over IP was just really blowing up, it was a discussion, and I found a lot of times you bring it up and the client would say, "Ooh, no, because it sounds like more money." Now they're talking about, "Oh, everything's going over our network. Okay, what about security? Talk to this guy, talk to this person." Okay, now everyone wants to talk about it. AV integrators don't like touching IT about as much as IT people like touching AV. And there's the third hybrid where there are IT integrators who are now doing AV and are trying to merge those two worlds. I was at ISE this year. No one was talking about security. They were talking about, look how fancy the camera is. Look how sleek the microphone is. No mentions of security, which I found strange. When I would go to a booth and ask the question, they'd be like, well, here's the specs on our projector. Here's the specs on our mic. Well, what about security? No one was talking about it. There was almost no discussion. And when the majority of the displays were about command control centers, I'm like, so you want me to pitch that to a nuclear power plant, but you have nothing to tell me about security. Doesn't make any sense. I won't say which vendor that was. I don't want to put them, on blast. But I just noticed the lack of it. I'm sure ISE and, Infocom and DSE, everything going forward, security will be a major issue, as now such a large portion of the workforce is working remotely. So yes, AV integrators need to have, I believe, and always should, an IT person to handle IT matters. Sometimes your client has a full IT workforce that you can rely on and work with. Sometimes they have a full IT workforce that you can't work with because they're just,
difficult. You can't work with them.
Can't work with them. It's just a bunch of guys with their cats living in their mom's basement. What can you do? But they should have somebody inside as an AV person at the AV firm that is an IT person who specifically does deal with the back and forth and answer those questions, who can actually navigate the client's network and show them any vulnerabilities or address any issues. I did a project recently for the University of Wisconsin, and I started off with one IT person in the meetings and ended up with six because, that part of the network's not my problem. I only deal with hardware. I only deal with patching. It's like, okay, guys, give me a point person, please. And it never was. It was just a mess. And I ended up having to coordinate their own IT staff at great cost to the client because now I was that IT project manager, not an AV project manager. So yes, it's important.
Well, Sean, an old friend of mine who used to work for UCLA made the joke. He was a tech manager for UCLA. He would make the joke that UCLA at the time, I don't know if this is still the case, but at the time, UCLA had over 100 IT departments, not people, IT departments. So think about that for a second. Mr. Jonkis, as a manufacturer, if you run into a situation where one of your clients, in other words, an integrator, doesn't necessarily have a security person on staff, or they might have an IT specialist or somebody that, what can you guys do as manufacturers? But obviously, education is something that you guys are a huge proponent of and offer classes darn near every week outside of COVID-19, darn near every week, both in Anaheim and elsewhere. What can you guys do as you're assessing and helping, the integrators, design systems and come up with these projects, to make sure that these are secure from an IT standpoint?
One of the things we do quite often is we'll work with whoever is working on a system design or solution and really help them break down the technologies and alert them to any potential areas where they may need to get more information or provide different levels of verification. You kind of talked about the liability part of things as well. And, most integrators don't realize that they need to have, that there are some liabilities involved, both for the client, their customer, and themselves as a business, as an ongoing entity. And that happens at like sort of the operational level, but I think it also happens at the, hey, I'm delivering services to my customer, my client level as well. There's like two different peers there, right? There's the assurance and insurance you provide for the company as an entity, and then use the assurance and insurance that you help to invoke for your clients. As a manufacturer, the best thing that we can do is make sure that for anyone that asks, that we kind of educate them what the technologies are. And education is a huge thing for, as you mentioned, for Extron. So we spend an extraordinary amount of time making sure that not really part of a sales process, but part of an education process. You're looking into system design. What are the best practices? What are things that we can do in order to facilitate a better understanding of those technologies? And as an example, just a small plug, but things I've worked on. If you went to extron.com/product security, you actually find a list of white papers that very generically describe things like encryption and certificates, where we talk about the differences between SSH, SSL, where we describe some best practices for deploying network systems. And for the most part, it's not really based on what, you know, is required just for an Extron device. It's usually pretty good practice for any device. And so as folks are giving us a call or contacting us or in the recent past, we're meeting them on site. You know, these are some of the takeaways that we make sure folks have. You get that direct education, but you also have something they can read up on and share with their colleagues or with their customers later on. So those are some of the efforts we've been making sure we've been focused on here for the last several years.
Very cool. All right. Well, put that link up there as well. So that'll do it for us for this month, guys. Thank you both so much. Mr. Sean Reed, thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you.
How do people get a hold of you or find your fantastic, either your consulting, but also the cartoons, the comics?
You got to go to his cool website first.
You
of
do.
All.
That's yes, what I you did. Do. Everyone should. Yes. AstromanAV.com. And you would think I would have plenty of time to write and do more, which I do love to do in my spare time. But unfortunately, I do have a 3-year-old at home. And so I spend most of the time chasing him around and watching cartoons. But yes, AstromanAV.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Please feel free to reach out, send me a question. Any cool stories of old AVs tech is always my favorite thing. I love pictures of old AV tech. And yeah, that's the best way to reach us. Email, call us. I'm just sitting here. always willing to take a call. But yeah, please reach out and always here to help.
All right, very good. Thank you so much. Mr. Jonkus, Derek Jonkus from Extron. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. And I know the routine, so you can reach me at extron.com. You can find me over there somewhere. Or you can find me on LinkedIn as well. It's been a pleasure talking to you both today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it. For us, for AV Nation, go by the website. Don't follow me on the Twitters. A couple things about the Twitters, real quickly. Go if you're up on a Sunday morning and you are on Twitter, join the conversation. You don't have to. Our buddy Chris Netto, for, oh good Lord, almost 2 years now, has led a conversation called AV in the AM. If you search for the hashtag AV in the AM, great conversation, great folks, great insights. You don't have to chat if you don't want, but some really smart people joining in. But one thing else that Chris is doing is every other Friday now, during this pandemic, and I actually hope that it continues afterwards, he's hosting a virtual happy hour. So, you know, join in, grab a drink, even if you don't drink alcohol. I don't care if you drink tea or water or whatever else. But it's a great way to just connect with people literally all over the world. 2 weeks ago, we had folks from Uganda, from Australia, a bunch of folks from England, and then a bunch of yahoos from America. It was really quite remarkable. About 100 people. And so what we're doing is we're utilizing Zoom's breakout room functionality, putting people into rooms about between 8 and 10 each room, and it gives you opportunity to talk to people. So check that out. But yeah, go by our website, avnation.tv. That's avnation.tv. You'll find this program and a host of others. Also, while you're there, check out our supporter section. These are the folks who help us financially, help us bring you ITAV and AV Week and all the others. Extron is one of those, and we thank them for their support. So all that and more at avnation.tv. That's avnation.tv. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. That is all the time we have for ITAV.
Did it record?
It's still recording.
I'm bad. Sorry. It was a hard thing to send you in the middle of the show, but I really wanted to know.
You should. Did you press record? I don't know.
It's the B-roll that he uses that he doesn't tell anyone about.
It's the B-roll that he puts.
For this show would be the best content ever.